You're listening to the HE Knowledge Hub, brought to you by Next Steps Southwest, or NSSW. Our mission is to offer you impartial information and signposting on various HE-related issues, so you can make an informed decision about HE that's right for you. You can find out more about our events and resources online at nextstepssw.ac.uk. Welcome to a very special edition of the HE Knowledge Hub podcast. In this edition, we're handing over the reins to our student reporters. To set the scene, this year St Ives in Cornwall is hosting the 2021 G7 Summit, and the Future Leaders Network proudly hosted the Y7 Summit in May. Youth delegates from across the G7 nations presented their recommendations to the government, advising on how they can ensure young people's voices are heard. Our student reporters have had the unique online work experience opportunity to meet the Y7, and this podcast is the result.
Hello, we are students from Richard Lander School who have been chosen to do a youth journalism course surrounding the G7 at Carbis Bay.
All of us here have both an interest in the environment and the media, so being able to interview people with expertise in both was really interesting.
Here is Sophie from the Y7 interviewed by Tilly, Martha and Lauren.
In your interview with Boris Johnson, what was it like meeting a world leader and what did he say that stood out for you the most?
Oh, I love that. Well, I hope you've seen the interview. It was actually on my birthday. I even got a birthday from the Prime Minister when we were off camera. So what was it like meeting a world leader? I suppose there's something incredible about, you know, meeting someone who has had to face all of the challenges that the last 18 months has thrown at us, and a real sense of honour that he took time out of his diary to speak to us. And that for me was really important because no other G7 engagement group got to interview the Prime Minister. We were the only one, and that just shows a real sense of commitment to young people as the force for the future. And that really kind of stuck with me as, you know, wow, our Prime Minister is trying to battle coronavirus and still takes the time out to speak to me. The bit that I think stood out the most from my conversation with him was around how the reason why we care about young people and why we care about young people's views is because young people aren't just speaking about themselves now, they're also speaking on behalf of young people yet to come, and that policies need to be made not just with kind of one really small targeted end goal in mind, but with an understanding of the systemic and long-term impacts of policy recommendations on those now and in the future. And I think it was really nice to hear him recognise that, because that's one of the big things that young people are calling for. Don't just tackle the kind of, don't firefight, don't tackle the problem in the here and now, solve the looming crises of the future, like the mental health crisis, and make sure that you are investing now in the things that will become really urgent in 10 years' time, instead of just battling the things that are right up here now. So that really stuck with me and was really kind of really strong for me, because that is the type of policy making that I know young people want to see.
And this is Ryan from ACOMS, interviewed by Neve and Elizabeth.
Do you believe, as of right now, the upcoming G7 summit, that the UK is actually doing enough to sustain a healthy environment? And if they're not, what issues do you think the UK should prioritise over others?
I think we've done a lot. I think we're at a point now where we've kind of set out the direction that we want to take. It's just about working out how best to do that. And I think it's all about encouraging people to kind of change what they do, really, and make those small changes to make a big impact. So for me, things like encouraging sustainable transport options, encouraging people to go out and plant trees and engage with nature, I think that's key. And at the moment, it's quite difficult to do that because, for example, I mean, the cost of driving to a location versus the cost of taking a train, often it's actually cheaper to drive because the cost of train tickets is so high. So if, for example, people were kind of encouraged to take the train, you know, and it was kind of made more accessible, I think people would quite easily transition over to that because they would understand the benefits. Things like in urban areas in particular, pedestrianizing town centres, make them more walkable, you know, and create those kind of interconnected links of footpaths for people to actually want to walk into town, you know, and often if you create a good footpath and you've got trees planted next door, you kind of tick two birds with one stone because you've encouraged people to walk and you've also planted trees, which are natural carbon sequesters, you know, so it's kind of working out those kind of joined up things that can make the maximum difference.
I'm Dylan, and next, me, Dan and Otis interview Bran from the Eden Project.
What do you hope for the G7 to bring to environmental projects, like the Eden Project, to conservational efforts?
I would like people to stop thinking about their, or countries to stop thinking about their own immediate needs and start thinking of us as a bunch of people living on a tiny rock in the middle of space. And then people start going, well, actually, we all have a duty to look after this place. And it's our duty. If it's happening to someone in Africa, in a tiny village on the side of a mountain with no rain, no water, then it's happening to me too. You know, this global thing that we keep talking about, we need to start thinking globally. And those people are in a really brilliant position to do that. You know, they're able to take their influence and their power and say, no, this is about everybody. It's a bit like the sort of a great example of it is the COVID vaccine argument at the moment. You know, there's no point in us having it if everybody else in the world hasn't got it. You know, and it's the same thing, really. You know, there's no point in us living a clean, green, carbon-free society if other countries are having to produce tons and tons of stuff that we're buying. You know, we have to think about this globally. So there's that. But again, going back to the other end of the scale, I also think that politicians have a duty to make this a personal thing as well. So it's not just about big numbers and, you know, people writing huge newspaper articles and, you know, making great grand speeches. It's about showing us how they and their families and their offices are also walking the talk, you know, in small ways, because that's how we're going to do it. We're not going to do it in a big grand sweepy way. I believe it's in lots of little bits, and they've got to show us those lots of little bits as well, you know, and be human about it and go, well, we don't know either, but let's try this out. Yeah, both ends of the scale are really important, you know, and these people have an opportunity like no other people. Well, not quite, but, you know, they are incredibly influential, and they have a duty, I believe, and not just for you, but for me and for your children and everybody, to sort of start changing the way we do stuff.
Right, thanks. Just one. Just the last question.
Tomorrow, I'll have a different answer.
Our last question. If you were to be able to give a message to the leaders of the G7, what would it be?
What are you going to tell your kids? What are you going to say in 30 years' time when they turn around and go, well, you could have changed this. You could have done something about it. You know, and I think that says, I'd say it to any adult, basically, but to them especially. What are you going to tell your kids? What are you going to be proud of when your kids grow up? You know, and if it is that you turn around and go, well, yeah, climate change was going to trash your future, but we've done something about it, then you could be really proud about it. But if they stand up and go, well, we could have done something about it, but hey, you just weren't worth the effort, then, you know, they're not worth worrying about.
Here is Claire Guiner from the 2 Minute Beach Clean, interviewed by Martha, Tilly and Lauren.
During summer periods in Cornwall, what effect does tourism have on the ocean and the behaviour of wildlife, particularly marine animals?
Okay, so tourism has got, it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? So when we have visitors come, they love to see our wildlife, and people protect what they love. So it's a great thing if they can see the marine wildlife. If they see some dolphins going past, they have that magical feeling of like, oh my God, there's dolphins. We must do more to protect the dolphins. They're beautiful. So it's got that really, really good side of it. But the other side is they want to interact with the wildlife. And we see that especially with seals. So baby seals might come out onto the beach to rest. And if people get too close, it can have really, really bad impacts on them, on their growth, on their feeding habits, and on their survival rates, unfortunately. It's the same with birds as well. We have a lot of nesting birds, particularly in the cliffs. People are just a bit too close. It scares the birds away. They might leave their nests, leave their babies behind. So it's really got to be very well managed, I think. There's got to be a lot more education. Like, yes, brilliant. Go and see that seal that's on a beach, but stay hundreds of meters away from it and look from a distance. Sort of appreciate it, but let's not scare them into running away, I guess.
And this is Sarah from the Seal Project being interviewed by Neve and Elizabeth.
What should you do if you find a seal then, instead of what you do? Because that's probably what I would have done or wanted to do.
Literally, call British Divers Marine Life Rescue, and they send medics out. And there's an awful lot of them down in Cornwall. They're a bit more scattered around here. And it just so happened that as medics, we were all based in Brixham, so we can attend call outs kind of super fast.
How do you improve the coastlines and conserve the seal population?
A lot of education, really, I suppose, is the key to that. Litter is one of the biggest issues. Obviously, you know, you get a lot more seals, so you have a lot more entangled seals. We haven't come across any with such nasty wounds as you've had down there. But obviously, silly things like frisbees seem to be the one that does a lot of damage. We have Easter Bunny, our seal, up here. And I'm beginning to wonder where he's gone, because he has vanished for a week or so. But he does do this from time to time. I don't think seals like holiday makers, if I'm honest. He got entangled in industrial plastic, which was around his neck. And that was last year, last April. And for a week, we were like, oh, we don't know what to do. We've just got to wait for him to turn up somewhere where we can get to him. And a week later, he turned up in the same spot, no plastic. A year later, he still rocks up in the same spot. He is a creature of habit. But again, we realised we knew him from the area as a younger seal. So what happened to him happened in Brixham. So as a result, we started on a big litter picking thing along the breakwater and collected 226 sacks of marine litter. Yeah.
Wow, that's a very large amount.
And in amongst that, I've even got a crisp packet from 1996.
Those last long.
So that's older than you guys.
Here is Claire Guiner from the 2 Minute Beach Clean, interviewed by Martha, Tilly and Lauren.
As residents of Cornwall, we're passionate about the Cornish wildlife and the countryside. In terms of local areas, what steps can be taken to preserve Cornish environment?
I mean, coming from a litter picking kind of charity, I obviously think people need to be taking away whatever they're bringing to a beautiful place. Lots of people go to a beautiful place to have a picnic or to, you know, play some games, have a nice afternoon. If you can carry it in, you can carry it out. And that's got to be the message, that we don't just leave stuff behind. It's that kind of leave no trace kind of thing. I think that's got to be the way forward. And I think there seems to be a little bit of an attitude at the moment that wild spaces and blue spaces and green spaces are there for us to enjoy, which is true to some degree. But I think we've got to understand that they're there for a much bigger reason, and that, you know, a forest is there to support the entire country. You know, the benefits of having a forest are far more than just you being able to go and read your book under a tree. And having that kind of respect for the greater picture, I think, is a real shift that's needed. A lot of people seem to be able to think that they can just do what they like in our green spaces. And that's not really the case, because they're not there for us as much as they are for the importance of the whole climate.
And this is Ryan from ACOMS, interviewed by Niamh and Elizabeth.
With the G7 summit just around the corner, we're wondering what you, as an environmental consultant, hope the summit will achieve.
I really hope that there's a big emphasis on the environment, really. I mean, if anything, COVID has kind of heightened how important open space and nature is, particularly for people to go and relax, you know, and escape. And I think historically, it's very easy to kind of talk about climate change and recognise what the impacts are, but then a lot more challenging to then kind of drive that through any kind of policy initiatives. And I've been quite encouraged recently, because a lot of authorities across England have declared climate and biodiversity emergencies. They're kind of putting forward climate change action plans. And a lot of the groups that I work with, they have a strong kind of focus on those environmental and climate agendas.
I'm Dylan. And next, me, Dan and Otis interview Bran from the Eden Project.
What would you say about the natural environment is most interesting to you?
When I'm working with young people, I always say that if you get bored of looking at nature, you're not looking hard enough. You know, because every leaf you turn over, every giant view you see, every tiny minuscule little thing scribbling around on sort of a pile of poo or, you know, whatever it is, there's always something you don't know about it, you know, and there's always something else to learn. And even when you think you know something really well, like, I don't know, a sparrow, suddenly you'll discover something amazing about it. So I love that about it. I love its intricacies, and I love the sort of fact that we just don't really get it yet. But I think what I mostly love about it is the fact that it's just beautiful. You know, it fills my eyes with beauty. I really miss it when I'm not seeing green and I'm not seeing blue and I'm not sort of feeling the wind. I just, you know, I feel like my body, my soul is going stale. So I think there's a sort of, I'd be a hippie if I said it was spiritual, because it's not really. It's just something that makes me, it lifts me up, makes my heart sort of sing, you know. So I love that. I was just been down at Senen for a few days, standing on Land's End and stuff. Well, not quite Land's End, but, you know, and it just, you know, I came away from that just buzzing. So I could talk all day, but I love it, basically. It's great. Nice one, nature.
Up next is Duncan Kenny, who works at Torbay Centre charity Tide. Interviewing him is Dylan, Dan and Otis.
With the G7, there looks like there'll be much funding for new offshore technologies. For example, Plymouth University has secured millions of pounds for new floating wind farms. Do you support marine sustainable tech, or do you think the money should be spent elsewhere, seeing the detrimental effect it can have on sea life?
It's a real tricky one to answer that, because I do support it. I do want to support it. We have to move forward. We have to be innovative, and we have to trial things. We have to become better at it. The way we become better is by investing money in development. So we do have to do that. So I totally support that. However, we do have to measure our impact. We have to have environment impact studies that actually reflect the impact that that innovation is going to have. And it's a really difficult one. There are so many different ways to invest that money as well that would be really valuable. But there, as with everything, it's about resources. How much money can we allocate to a project? Is it going to move us forward? Is it going to help us develop sustainable methods where we as a species can have a lesser impact as we grow and dominate further in both the marine and land environments? I would love to see some of the money rerouted into other causes, but actually innovation and development for sustainable methods is a fantastic way forward. So it's a really difficult one to answer that, really, but I do support it, but we've just got to be very cautious.
Here is Sophie from the Y7 interviewed by Tilly, Martha and Lauren.
Being the chair of the Y7, how did you get into the Y7 and why?
So I got into the Y7 back in 2016, and my parents sent me a link saying, this looks interesting, do you want to get involved? And I remember looking at it and going, wow, the official youth engagement group for the G7, I'm never going to be good enough for that. It's going to be too hard work for me and I'm not going to be good enough. But I thought it was a really interesting opportunity. And the Y7 that year was talking about things like social justice, migration and kind of international security. And I have to say, I knew nothing about any of those things. So I just went, you know what, I'm going to just throw myself into it. And I applied to become head delegate to the UK's delegation, because I thought, as head delegate, you don't need to know the detail. You just have to be able to run a team that knows the detail. And amazingly, I got it. So I went out to Tokyo, Japan back in 2016, and I spent a week leading a team of three men, all of whom were older than me, at the ripe old age of 24. And I spent time negotiating with international young people on recommendations that we would put forward to the G7. And I loved it. And there were kind of two reasons why I loved it. The first was that I met some incredible young people from all over the world who I'm still in touch with to this day. And the second was that I genuinely believe in how important and inspiring it is for young people to get involved in decision making. I actually remember when I was probably about your guys' age, Matilda, Martha, Lauren, having all of these kind of visions and hopes for the future of the world. And sometimes it's quite easy for that to get knocked out of you, especially in kind of the world of work. And, you know, people just say that's how things are done here and, you know, just, you know, suck it up and deal with it. And actually, the Y7 doesn't say that. The Y7 says, young people, you have a voice. Young people, you have a right to have a say in how the world is governed, in the big decisions that affect your future. Come and get involved in them. And that feeling, really, that's what inspires me every day. That's what gets me out of bed. And it's what motivated me to take on the role of volunteer at the Future Leaders Network. So immediately after 2016, I just volunteered for a little bit. And then I got appointed director for external affairs. And then I got appointed chief executive officer. And now I'm chair of the Y7. So what it shows is, if you love something and you keep working at it, you know, it doesn't feel like work. It feels like fun. It feels like play.
We, the young people, have done as much as we can, but we are not the ones in power. The climate is getting hotter.
But nothing is adapting. If you fail now, that's on you. The consequences will affect us all.
We believe that a solution to the problem of carbon emissions from vehicles is
to make electric cars more accessible around the world.
Plymouth University have secured millions of pounds
to create floating wind farms. But to fulfil Cornwall's potential, much more needs to be done
to make Cornwall the hub of the future.
So, let's step into a greener future. Reward, reuse, recycle, rewild. Now, the weight of the world is on your shoulders.
Will you buckle under the pressure?
Or stand tall?
Thank you to our student reporters and those who've supported the production of this podcast, namely Bauer Media, Cornwall Council, the Future Leaders Network, and to the interviewees and the Y7 delegates themselves. You can listen to more HE Knowledge Hub podcasts on our website, nextstepssw.ac.uk, as well as finding us on Spotify. And you can join the conversation about the G7 and Y7 online via hashtag making waves for hashtag future generations. You can discover more about Next Steps Southwest by searching at Next Steps SW.